welcome to Femboldened episode 10, double digits. Woo! I'm Kirsten Pope.
And I'm Stephanie Graff.
And today we are tackling women in education.
And we're going to try and bring in a lot of different aspects of women in education, especially considering that we both are women in education.
Right. We are intellectuals and scholars.
Intellectuals and scholars, which we love, but also we're aware that that gives us a slight bias. So right. We will be hopefully bringing in some different perspectives today.
Especially since a few episodes back, we talked about women and careers and motherhood and stuff. And obviously education, especially higher education and the workforce are intertwined. And so we're going to try to kind of lean towards more on the education part while acknowledging that whatever happens in education also impacts what goes on in the business world.
Yes. And so this has been especially interesting, especially after we planned this episode. I feel like it's made me more hyper aware of some of the issues. Again, we are located in Provo, Utah on BYU campus. And so there are some especially unique challenges to women in education. I feel like this is actually a really interesting microcosm to study. I work in the Humanities College, even though I go to school in the business school. I am the PR coordinator for the College's Humanities. So my office is surrounded by professors, and it just so happens the offices on either side are women professors. And it's been really interesting to watch some of the interactions of these women professors, these PhDs, and especially a lot of their male students or just extremely conservative students. And honestly, I have been shocked at some of the stuff that they have to deal with. I had no idea. I just assumed that, like, when you have a PhD and you reach this level of, you know, academia and people respect you all the same, but
that's
actually
when people respect you.
Yeah, and so it's been really interesting to watch. So, I mean, just some examples, like the professor right next door, she said that several times she's had the LDS, the Mormon Proclamation to the Family, shoved under her door.
Oh, dear.
By students.
And that kind of, like, that document, for those who aren't aware, it's a document which we support, but also, like, lists gender roles and which could be misconstrued by some more conservatives.
Yeah, so we're not speaking out against it, but we are speaking out against the way
it was obviously used. Somebody was trying to make a suggestion that she is somehow not living her faith.
Well, yeah, and they're assuming she's not living up to her faith, and B, it's essentially saying, you shouldn't be here.
Yeah.
You don't belong here.
What about your kids? What about your family? What about the kitchen?
Yeah. This woman's got to be like 60, okay?
Oh my gosh.
Like, I really don't think she needs to, like, go home and make her kids a sandwich.
We're fine.
Yeah. And so, but just that hasn't just happened one time. She says that's happened several times. And then there's also the Humanities College is where the Women's Studies department is housed. So each professor, they have this tiny little corkboard outside their office, and that's just the way the building it's housed in was built. And so they kind of use that to advertise for upcoming events and kind of, you know, show their personality a little bit. And I love walking around the building, the JFSB, and kind of seeing the personality of these professors, because the Humanities College, believe it or not, is actually the most liberal college on campus.
Which makes sense.
So some people on their cork boards, they have rainbow signs that say, "We support you," in support of LGBT. Some of the women's studies professor have pictures of Beyonce and lipstick feminism, and oftentimes it gets torn down.
Oh my gosh.
Like this, you know, corkboard of things that belong to them will get torn down by students, or things will get ripped off. Or it's just shocking to me that just the very, very blatant sexism that I've seen. And it's very bold to call something just out and outright sexist, but, I mean, I have no qualms in doing that. Like, it has honestly been, like, very, very appalling. And most of it from students around here that don't respect their women professors like they respect their male professors.
Right.
But one thing that I think is common everywhere is that I'm seeing these women having to work harder than their male counterparts to receive the same respect in their
field. And I think that's fair for any disenfranchised group. I mean, I was about to say minority group, but obviously biologically women are not the minority. In some cases they are the majority. But for any disenfranchised group, if they're being oppressed, they kind of have to work twice as hard to be respected just as much. And that's sad. It's really sad.
like we said at the beginning, we kind of wanted to make this episode parse it out a little bit from our Women and Careers episode. And so we wanted to talk about some of the stats or some of the trends in the U.S. about higher education and women receiving higher education versus men. So the New York Times published an article earlier this month called The Increasing Significance of the Decline of Men. So I saw this on Twitter and just instantly was just dove right in.
Click that so fast.
Yeah, that's clickbait for me. So I personally thought it was interesting. Kirsten did not find it as compelling.
Just, oh my gosh. It was just very literary.
It was.
And my attention span probably doesn't last that long. Anyway, there are some good parts.
There are some good parts. As I said in the beginning, I am an intellectual and a scholar. So I enjoyed it.
I don't know what you were implying.
But so one of the interesting things that I brought up, and I think most people know this, is that women are getting higher degrees in much higher rates than men are now. There are...
Which is a recent trend over the past years. This is kind of a product of World War II. As women were entering the workforce, they were thus being educated. And my grandmother actually attended college at the tail end of World War II. So she was kind of in the middle of all this. She's like, all the men were off at war, and so we were filling up the seats at BYU. So beginning there and then pushing through the 70s for first wave and second wave feminism, we are to where we are today, which I feel is a great victory for women that we are achieving just as much in higher education as far as degrees and attendance and whatever.
And I love it. I think it's a really good thing. But the article actually brought up some interesting dichotomies here. It mentioned, you know, women are getting education or in higher degrees in much higher rates than men, and men have higher rates of drug use and violence and jail time and going to prison.
Yeah.
And so it would appear that women are really on the rise and men are really on the decline, if you're really to put it simply. But then they also talk about how the CEOs of Fortune 500 companies are still 95% men.
Yeah.
Despite...
So that's a pretty big discrepancy.
Yeah. Despite women having so much more education, that's not being reflected in the workplace.
Right. And obviously with something on such a macro level as this, there are so many factors, you know, intersectional feminism, you know, race, class, economic status kind of all come into play here. But I think what it shows to me is that the environment of the workforce isn't hospitable to a woman working.
Mm-hmm.
It is more hospitable to a man working, which is traditional. I mean, it's to be expected that it's that way.
Yes, but I think the underlying factor isn't what people might think, which is, you know, women wanting to spend time at home with their kids. I think, unfortunately, it's just a boys' club.
Mm.
And I was talking to my fiancé about this because he interned on Wall Street last summer. So he said there were maybe four or five analysts in his class. But he said within like 2 days, he was going to the lunches with the coworkers. He was invited to the breakfast and to the lunches and to just go and get ice cream in an ice cream truck. I mean, I don't want to say obviously, but it was mostly men that worked there. And he's like, the woman interns never got an invite. Not because they were sexist or because they, you know, they did that intentionally, but we were just friends. He's like, we'd talk about sports, we'd talk about girls, we'd talk about dating. Like, we were just friends. And so I'm the one that got the invite to that. And so obviously when they're talking about who are we going to hire, they're going to hire the people they want to work with. They have to work 80 hours a week. Like, I want to work with him. We're friends. It really doesn't have a whole lot to do with their capabilities or, you know, their work ethic. It's just kind of, and I've seen that in places I've worked before, kind of bringing this back to education and bridging that gap. A lot of you have probably seen, speaking about Wall Street, the statue.
Yeah.
There's the Wall Street Bull.
Kind of a bronzy statue.
Yes. That was put up, correct me if I'm wrong, I think during or just post Great Depression to talk about bull and bear markets. So just the beginning of this month, Women's History Month, there was a statue of a little girl in front of the bull. And it was only supposed to be there for, I think, until like the lease was through the beginning of April. But they just renewed it for another several months, maybe another year.
And the girl, like, strikes a pose, like, hands on hips as she's, like, opposing this symbol of the American economy, which is pretty
Yeah, and
hardcore.
I loved it. When I first saw it on my Twitter feed, I was like, oh, what is this?
Yeah.
I loved it.
Like, how long has that been there?
Yeah, I was like, yes, 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 so much yes. So I love it, but I love even more what it represents, and I'm not exactly sure which entity made this goal, but the statue symbolizes a goal to have equal representation on the boards of these major Fortune 500 companies
right.
by some year mark.
Arbitrary.
Yeah. And so I loved it. And so I was, again, talking to my fiancé about it and how much I loved it. And then I brought up a New York Times article and say, this is very feasible because women are getting more education, blah, blah, blah. And he's like, well, that I really like this sentiment, but that's not economically feasible. And I was like, Hold up. Yes. No, my fiancé is not a misogynist, so I don't think that. So obviously I was like, what do you mean? And he just talked about, well, like, it, you know, from an analyst point of view, it takes a long time to train and it's a lot of money to bring someone on board. So he's like, if there's me, a 25-year-old man, and a 25-year-old woman who they're considering bringing on, it's a lot of money to bring someone on board and to train them and to, and their benefits, blah, 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 et cetera, et cetera. And he's like, if she's married and they can assume she will want to leave in the next 2 years, and granted, I think this is somewhat of a Utah-centric perspective.
Right.
And she'll want to leave in the next 2 years or so to be home with her kids, just from a purely economic standpoint, it would be more feasible to hire the man, which obviously I don't like and is illegal, but it happens.
The motivation is clear that you want longevity, you know, rise up the ranks. It requires a certain level of commitment long term. That being said,
please come in with the kicker.
This is probably one of my biggest gripes with the American capitalist society, not to, like, be really political, is that they lose the human picture.
Mm-hmm. When you just focus on the bottom line.
Right. Right. That, yes, that they're looking at it so one-dimensionally. Mm-hmm. They're looking at it as, well, for our bottom line, for our profit margin, it makes more sense, it's more economically feasible to hire the man. But you lose, in making a decision just on that criteria, you lose all the dimensions that a diversified, both racially and with gender and sexuality and whatever, you lose the benefits of a diversified mm-hmm. company.
Which, I mean, there's so many benefits. I mean, economic benefits of having a diverse company. And, I mean, bringing it from the public sector, I mean, the private sector, into the world of academia again, I think one thing, again, that I've seen in any department I've taken a class in, any college I've been in here at the university, whether or not the school is female heavy, like something like the Humanities College or Family, Home, and Consumer Science, something that traditionally has a much higher rates of women in class, the professors are still far and above male.
Yeah.
Even in a field and in a college that is dominated by women, the professors are always, and again, especially here, at least 90% male.
Yeah, I'm in a major and in a field that is very dominated by women. And I would say it's probably maybe 60-40 men to women. But the field itself is like 90% women. Speech pathology is what I'm referencing, which I think is a generational thing.
Mm-hmm.
Especially as we've talked about this rise and this change of the amount of women getting advanced degrees, that it's definitely a generational thing. And I mean, I appreciate, like, some of my favorite professors are men, and
yeah.
I'm just as fond as my women professors, and I appreciate the diversity of thought that they bring into my education. And I wish that diversity of thought was found in all fields, particularly STEM fields, meaning like science and technology and math and engineering, fields that are typically male dominated. I feel like they would benefit very much so by the female perspective. I mean, the female perspective, again, being very broad.
Yeah, that doesn't just mean one
right.
thing, but what we really mean is a diverse perspective.
Exactly. And gender equality is a catalyst to having a diversified perspective, a diversity of perspectives.
In talking about these heavily female fields, we're talking about, you know, there are that I feel like you can say, like, a major or a field, and people can just guess, like nursing, or even my undergrad, PR, was pretty heavily mm-hmm. female communications.
Right. Yeah, mine's in the education college, mm-hmm. and that's
oh yeah
very dominated by women.
Elementary ed, teaching.
Yeah.
And so in talking about that, I think it really boils down to quote unquote compassionate fields versus techie fields. Like, I remember I was once dating this guy who was a developer, and he was talking about this girl in our apartment complex who was a CS major. She was doing computer science. And he was like, wow, like, she's probably the only girl in her class. And when she gets out, she can get a great paying job and literally anyone will hire her because they don't have really any women. And I was wondering, why is that? It, like, is that an innate thing in the difference between the way men and women think? Mm-hmm. Or is that the way they're socialized?
Good question.
Which is kind of hard because I wouldn't put either of us in quote unquote techie fields, but my minor is information systems. At the graduate level, especially, I can tell you that in my IS classes, there's maybe 3 other women and maybe 50 men in the class. Maybe it's the feminist inside me, and I'm not sure why.
It's always her.
I need a name like Sasha Fierce, the little. For my little feminist inside. But I love being able to combine the soft skills and hard skills.
I mean, I'm not going to lie. Like, in making my own career decisions, the idea of, will this be a good job when I have a family? Or will this be a good job if I'm trying to be a mom? Did cross my mind and did factor into the equation. I wouldn't say that that's as big of a factor for men, mm-hmm. that they can have more fluidity as far as what they choose. That women have carry the burden of the family and the burden of having to make that prediction. I personally enjoy the science of my field very much, almost more than the interpersonal part of my field, which is probably bad. But I think it also, I would think most of it's learned, that we have these ideas of what is male and what is female, and we have this social desire to fit into the right category. And I think there's definitely a push to fit into the category of where you find passionate mm-hmm. things. I think we're trending in that direction, but there's, you know, still that separation.
Mm-hmm. And I think there is, it's like nature and nurture. It's impossible to parse out how much is learned and how much is innate. And I mean, like, for me, I just loved communications. I like writing, and reading were always my favorite things to do. And so when I went into college, I didn't want to do programming because I wanted to write, because that's what I like to do. But I think a lot of men, even if, you know, maybe they do like to write and they do like to communicate, they have more on the mind of, can I support a family? And I think maybe that is their hard part of the dichotomy. They don't have to think,
that's true.
Could I work with kids, but could I support a family with this?
Yeah.
And a lot of men, it's like, I mean, the most popular major on our campus is exercise science, which is just a feeder major into medical school.
Yeah, it's, I mean, parentheses pre-med.
Yeah. And so, yeah. You know, maybe a lot of men, like, do want to go into nursing or want to go into family, home, consumer science or, you know, something like that. Mm-hmm. But
no, we're kind of going through that with my own family, that my little brother is a freshman and he's trying to figure out his major. And that's definitely factoring into it, is that my parents are rightfully so. I mean, mm-hmm. and they've done it for me too, but want to make sure that he's headed in a direction that will lead towards a stable income. He's interested in psychology and kind of those softer fields and friction there, because he wants, you know, to do that, but then also has to keep in mind, well, how am I going to make a career out of this? Which I think, you know, goes into any college preparation mindset, but I think that definitely comes into play more when you're a man. So that's true. There's the other side of the coin there.
Mm-hmm. Which I think is kind of hard for men. My senior year of my undergrad, I did a research project for a professor in the interdisciplinary humanities. And so I did research. I conducted focus groups and created surveys and kind of amassed all of this data and was able to present it to the department. It was very interesting in the focus groups because we had current humanities majors come in. And granted, a lot of them were women, but the men, the male students, it was really interesting to get their perspective, because they would always focus more, I mean, if the question is, why would you choose this as your major? They would always focus more on, well, I'm also doing a digital humanities minor. I'm gonna hopefully go like combine like the human aspect into like the tech field, rather than women who are like, oh, well, I chose English because I like to analyze text.
Oh, interesting.
And so, you know, even men who do choose these quote unquote like softer, I feel like have to have a reason or a justification.
Yeah, something that's transferable.
Because I feel like people ask whether you're men or women. People ask, oh, you're doing such and such.
What are you going to do with that?
What are you going to do with that? Yeah. Which is so irritating.
Oh, my gosh.
But people ask me that all the time. Oh, you're getting an MPA? Like, what are you going to do with that? Okay, I don't know. Be a master? Leave me alone.
That's all I wanted to achieve is the title of master.
Super irritating. But I think that maybe is a harder thing for men to have to deal with.
On the other flip side to that flip side, so many sides to this coin. I don't know how prevalent this is elsewhere, but at BYU, it's becoming infamous. And this is especially true for education majors, not particularly speech, because, I mean, you tell people that and they don't really know what's going on.
But like elementary ed.
Yeah. They do know what that is. But if you're a woman and you tell somebody that you're going into L-Ed, they kind of assume that you're only in college so that you can get married or that you're getting your MRS degree, which is stupid and irritating.
I know. It's so annoying.
Or that you're only there to get married. That college is just a place where you can meet men. And I feel like that's very condescending and very insulting and frankly is very ignorant of those who assume that.
Yeah.
To be perfectly honest and a little harsh.
I'm a lady and a scholar. And I'm going to be very cocky right now. I am smarter objectively than a lot of men I know. I feel like everyone who is listening to this is rolling their eyes right now.
Right.
As am I. I am also rolling my eyes at myself. You know, a lot of women come to college and it'd be great to meet their husband. It doesn't mean they have to drop out. This isn't 1970 when everyone did that. But I think a lot of men come to college looking for their wife, but no one talks about that.
Right. But yes, exactly. And I think that's the thing is that they assume that women can't come to school for the same reasons that men can, that women can't come to school to begin a career and to begin an intellectual life, which I am very much into right now. It's very insulting. And also to assume that they're getting their education, quote unquote, just in case, or what if your husband dies?
Yeah. Like,
you're right. I'm planning my whole life on the prospect that maybe if
my
I get married,
my husband might die.
Like,
or be terminal.
Right.
Or
like, why would I? Why
get hurt in an industrial accident?
Oh my god. Why would I spend? First of all, why would I spend thousands of dollars for that? And why would I plan my life based on a possibility that has nothing to do with me?
Yeah.
That's just
exactly. Like, I'm not going to plan my life around. And I actually kind of got on a soapbox with my dermatologist.
Watch out, Dr. Carly.
about this a couple weeks ago because I actually went in. This is me personally. Sharing about my life, but
as one does at the dermatologist.
Yeah, I had a hormonal shift and I was getting some acne, which is why I was there. And so he was like, "Oh, well, we could put you on this stuff, these pills that'll clear up your acne, which I'm on and I love. If you want a recommendation, hit me up." And he's like, "Or we could just put you on birth control because, you know, you never know when that man's gonna pop along." And I was like, I don't want to pump my body full of artificial hormones on the off chance that someone I haven't met might come into my life.
Right.
I'm not going to plan my life around someone that I haven't met.
Right.
Which is really the crux of this whole issue, is I think women have this higher expectation to plan
their
life.
That in everything you do, even before this is even a possibility or even a reality, in everything you do, even when you're single and alone, you have to consider
plan your life around someone you haven't met.
Exactly. Consider the needs of this nebulous husband figure that isn't a part of your life. I mean, I know that sounds really harsh and not saying that I mean, we've already talked about very much how we do want to have an equal relationship, how we do want to make sacrifices for our loved ones. But if that loved one isn't
existent,
right, is non-existent, then why would I change my plans? Or why would I do something that I don't want to do for that reason? Or why would I discount my capability for intellectual achievement?
I don't think men are asked to do that as much, to plan their life around this. We mentioned this before, that, you know, they do factor in, you know, providing for a family, but
right,
that's much more nebulous than how are you going to change your life plan when.
Yeah, I think that the dichotomy is that men are the pursuers of that nebulous person and women are seen as the receivers of that nebulous person. I read an article by one of the apostles the other day, Mormon apostles, who kind of talked about that, who, you know, it was about marriage. I'm in a marriage and family class, about how men need to go out and date people and, you know, be proactive in dating. And then he also gave counsel to women to, and this is a direct quote, to get on with your life if that isn't happening.
Yeah.
And as you know, harsh as that sounds, that's true. That, I mean, we have talked about how women can be just as in charge of their dating life as men are. I just wish that in the church and in the world, women would stop viewing themselves as waiting to be picked up.
Yeah, because
and
that
start
that is
viewing themselves as proactive agents in their own life and in their own education.
Yeah, because that, I mean, that actually is a problem. And some women actually do feel that pressure. And I know at least in my own life, I've felt that pressure. Like, this is the number one reason why you're at college, blah, blah, blah. But, like, it's just, it creates a lot of dissonance. And I think it can cause a lot of stress and anxiety when you feel that your number one responsibility is with something you can't control.
Exactly.
That creates a lot of stress and anxiety.
Moving on from this, stepping off of the soapbox and moving on to another issue, I wanted to talk about the concept of mansplaining, which is a very new term that some may not understand.
How have we not talked about
right,
that
Right, I don't know. Like, I want to talk about, first of all, is that a thing? Well, what is it? And then, is that a thing? Because there are many people who would argue that it's not a thing.
Oh, my gosh, it's such a thing.
Okay. So, mansplaining is the colloquial term for a man talking in a condescending way to a woman who's more knowledgeable than he is on a subject. And the man is assuming that he knows more than her and therefore is talking to her as if she was a child and doesn't know anything and is ignorant.
I mean, or I think, yeah, that's a true definition. Or even if the woman doesn't know more than him. I have been mansplained to so many times. Actually feel like I'm getting patted on the head, but there's no hand there. But I can feel this pressure on my head, just like,
sweetie.
Boop, boop, boop. I was on a date a while back ago, and he was mansplaining, and I literally said, wow, I love it when you teach me things.
Because
it was
sensei.
So, yeah, thank you for teaching me. Dad, it's just the most bizarre feeling.
And of course, like, women can do it too. Like, I mean, obviously there are exceptions to the rule.
It's true. This is not a vast overstatement, but
right.
You want to know the number one thing that I get mansplained to? And this is, again, not a subject I'm more knowledgeable than them on. Sports. Sports. I hate sports, and I'm very open about that.
I love sports.
Thank you. So you've probably been mansplained.
My bracket is killing it, except for I'm second to my mom. So, like,
I'm second to my mom. My mom is crushing it.
I don't know what's going on this year. Anyway.
So she, I mean, your experience with this particular mansplaining on sports is probably different than mine. But whenever I get mansplained sports to, usually a couple times around the Super Bowl, I always just think, why is this something you assume I want to know about? Why do you assume I care? Or that somehow, like, it makes me, like, ignorant that I don't know the rules of football. Obviously,
yes,
I feel
yes,
really strongly about this.
Yeah. And so I think I told my brother once that he was mansplaining to me and he made fun of me for it for the rest of the night.
Oh,
so,
my gosh.
And I think the reason is that they feel that it's just some liberal feminist, like, nitpicking or being overly sensitive or, you know, viewing it as some microaggression that's, you know, ruining our lives and ruining the world. I don't think it's that big of a deal. But I do think there are things that we can do to change the way that we treat each other and change our assumptions about each other. The underlying principle for this is the assumption that whoever we're talking to is ignorant and therefore must be talked down because they don't understand. And I'm high and mighty and more knowledgeable than everybody else. And so I think the way to overcome mansplaining as a plague on our society.
Or womansplaining.
Or woman, yeah. I think this is kind of what a lot of things that we talk about come down to, is to stop making assumptions about other people and to talk to them in an open, genuine way. I mean, if somebody's truly passionate about something and they're telling me, I'm going to see that sincerity.
Yes, and it's not condescending.
Right. it's condescending when they do it as a way to show or perform, show mm-hmm. that they're, you know, superior or that yes. they're so smart or whatever.
When you feel like you are teaching someone something rather than sharing something yeah. with someone.
Yes. Recently in my professional practices class, we've been talking a lot about education and special education and kind of how we've come to where we've come as far as legislation goes. And the more and more we talk about special education specifically and all of the things that have to come into play and all the regulations there are and all of the things that we know from research and from science that tell us the best methods for teaching, the more anxiety I get, the more kind of objections I have. Not because I feel like special education is bad. Of course I don't. I wouldn't be in this field if I felt that special education was bad or that I feel that, you know, who we're helping doesn't deserve help. But I get anxious because that's a lot to do. And it's a lot to do that we put on the backs of a few people without the funding and resources that I feel that they necessarily need. Now, what this has to do with feminism is that the education system, be it public or private, be it primary, secondary, or higher, is something that we all collectively contribute to, whether directly through finances or through our own participation or indirectly through just by being in the world. So that's something we all collectively contribute to. And therefore, I feel like we should all collectively benefit from in an equal way, in a reciprocal way, that we give to the system and therefore we should receive. And I feel like as we've talked through these issues today, that there are definitely places where people don't receive as much as they should receive or deserve to receive. And that's something that is troubling to me as somebody who's going to be working in this field in the next few years. And it's something that affects both men and women, boys and girls.
Yeah, I mean, education, the education system, that feeds our future. It's very cliche. That feeds our future leaders and our future teachers. And I mean, our future members of society. An investment in education for anyone is really an economic investment for individually, collectively, and really nationwide and mm-hmm. globally. It's a contribution to the economy.
And just like we talked about before, I think we can't ignore the human aspect of that. Yes, it's an economic investment, but it's also a human investment. And so just because somebody does get married in college, or just because somebody does choose to go into a compassionate field or just because somebody chooses to go in a non-traditional field for their gender doesn't mean that they're of less value.
No. And I think a good place to wrap up is where I feel like we wrap up a lot of ours. It's just to have compassion for other people and not make these snap judgments, which is really where we ended our women in careers, and I think it's also very applicable here. Honestly, I'm including myself in this. If a girl wants to drop out and when she gets married to have kids, I'm not one. Yeah. I should not be one to call her.
Yeah, we have to be big enough stupid. People to respect that. Yeah.
Yeah, to sound like a 5-year-old. Also, to extend others the same every opportunity, mm-hmm. whether or not they want to take it. And I think that's really how we're going to achieve these goals. Going back to the little girl in the Wall Street bull, is to really let people make their own decisions, have their freedom to make their own decisions free from judgment.
Right.
And I think that's really where we're going to see these things thrive economically and in the private sector as well as in academia.
Yeah. Feminism is everyone's issues, guys. I think we've made that very clear.
Feminism is for everyone.
Right. Well, we appreciate you listening into this episode on education. We just have 2 more episodes left before we wrap up season 1, so buckle up.
Buckle up. It's going to get nuts.
This is Fem Bolden.